Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, coming in hot from Sterling, Kansas. It's Jenk Jadermom!
Yeah!
We're back. I know it's been a few weeks, but a lot of exciting things have been happening. The Timberwolves signed Rasual Butler. Kevin Garnett's going to be retiring. So many exciting things. Jenk, what do you think?
Timberwolves, if you are a Timberwolves fan, you are one of the best humans in the world right now, because life is amazing. And we have it better than everyone else combined.
That is true. That is true. So much happening. Where do we start? Where do we even begin?
Well, first of all, you said we signed Rasual Butler.
Yeah, this is breaking.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. I just saw it, like, 2 hours ago.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't know why.
Well, we need like another 37-year-old wing to take over the Andre Miller position. I mean, he was a point guard, but we just need like old guys that aren't, you know, that good anymore.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. He did have that one streak where he was fire from three. He hit like 8 shots in a row, and then he kind of faded. So who knows? Maybe he'll get some money, veteran minutes. But I just don't think we need to sign anybody else. We got too many players.
Yeah, I guess if we needed one more thing, it was probably another wing, so it makes sense, and he can kind of shoot threes, so.
Yeah. Lots of hype. The hype train is for real. People are just freaking out about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Vegas has us at 41.5 wins. What do you think? Too high, too low? Are you going over or under?
I mean, I already gave my prediction at 44, so I'm over. Yeah, I'm definitely over. I think people are underrating how vast of a difference it's going to make having Tom Thibodeau.
My 50-win prediction is not vastly overrating. I think that is exactly where we'll be. We are on the fast track to the NBA playoffs, my friend. Do you think, in order for us to get there, we should be re-signing Shabazz Mehamed or Yang to rookie extensions? Is it worth it? Are they part of our future?
Okay, so first of all, Shabazz Mehamed, I really doubt that a rookie extension is going to happen. And if it were going to, he'd have to sign pretty low contract deal. I don't think we want to put too much money in him. And the problem with signing them to extensions right now is they have such small cap holds. So what happens is after your contract is up, before you sign with anybody or like that, you have a cap hold. So you have money taking place for your cap, so you can't just have a bunch of people who get to restricted free agency and you sign a bunch of max players and then you sign your guys. So we have them both on like $4 million cap holds or something, which is really small. So if we want to sign them as restricted free agents, we can still do that next summer. And I really don't see any scenarios, unless if Jang, we could somehow trick him into doing like a $10 million a year contract or something cheap like that. But other than that, I don't see any way that we sign him to rookie extensions. What do you think?
Well, I think part of it depends too. And, you know, there may be a more immediate need if this KG buyout thing actually happens. We don't know what exactly is going to happen. It sounds like they're working on a deal right now to get, assuming Garnett's going to be ending his career and moving into a different role for the Timberwolves organization. I know him and Glenn Taylor have been having those chats, but there hasn't really been a decision made. So that position may be more immediate in looking at signing someone like Gorgie. I don't think we need to. I think trading Shabazz Mehamed is an absolute necessity for the Timberwolves moving forward. He is not a part of us in the future. We need to get some legit either future picks to try and salvage the abysmal 2018 trade that we somehow thought would be smart to get Adrian freaking Payne. Huge mistake. We don't want that. We need to get something back for Shabazz. I'm thinking future picks. I'm thinking maybe even a stretch four, something that will actually benefit us. I don't think Shabazz is part of the picture.
A couple things. The Kevin Garnett, I don't see how that has any effect on the Gorgie Jang deal, because Garnett was going to be gone next year anyway. So I don't see how that affects our Gorgie Jang workings. And with Shabazz Muhammad, we're not going to get much for him. Like, you have this concept, like, we're going to get more than, like, a second-round draft pick or something for him. Right now, people wouldn't trade for him. I think his actual value is a tad higher than his perceived value. Or, actually, he's not good. Like, he doesn't contribute to winning basketball. But his potential, I think, is a little higher than his perceived potential. So I don't think we'd get much for him. And, actually, if you wanted stretch four, Shabazz Muhammad was our stretch four when we played at the best last season. When we were able to beat Golden State, it's because we played Shabazz Muhammad at the four.
That is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. I think there's like a 15% chance that we end up signing Shabazz Muhammad as a restricted free agent next year. Like, I don't think he's going to be a part of our future, but I'm not going to rule it out, because when he did play stretch four, that's when we were the best. Now, the guy can't guard worth a lick, and really all he can do is score. But, you know, he has shown signs of being a really effective scorer at playing with a high motor offensive. But
hey, let me give you a bit of a news flash, Jack. Shabazz Muhammad regressed by over 100.10% from 3-point last year. He shot 0.289. You call that a stretch four? I call that a shrink four. As someone who can dunk the ball, yes, 28.9%. Abysmal.
Yeah.
But that's not good.
Okay.
And you're calling him a stretch four. Listen, Shabazz is not a part of our future. He can't play defense. He's not going to fit within Thibodeau's system. Thibodeau is going to despise coaching Shabazz Muhammad. He's sneaking girls into the room during summer camp.
Okay.
Don't we learn anything about
Come
these guys?
On.
He is
Come
not
on.
Going to be a part of our future. I'm throwing shade because Shabazz is not a part of the Timberwolves' future. Let's move on.
Okay, no, we're
Trade
not.
Trade him,
no, no, no,
get
no.
something
we're
out
not.
Of him. Even if it's a second-round pick. You know who was drafted in the second round? Manu Ginobili. You know who's coming out in this next draft? Manu Ginobili, his brother.
Okay, that's not true. All right.
From another mother.
Don't act like I'm this person who's saying that we need to keep Muhammad forever and he's a big part of our future. But here's what you're not acknowledging. First, last season was strange because he was coming off of a hand injury. So, yeah, for the majority, until the end of the season, he shot really poorly from three. The year before, though, he shot like 39%. And to be a stretch four, that doesn't mean you just have to be able to shoot the three.
Newsflash! Shabazz played 38 games last year and 37 his rookie year. Can't stay on the floor. How can he even have a somewhat of an idea of what his shooting percentage if he only played 38 games? Last year, his first full season, evened out his statistics, shot an abysmal rate, horrible efficiency. We don't want him.
To be a stretch four, it's not also just about shooting. Stretch fours, a valuable thing is being able to put the ball on the floor. And you need to be able to shoot in terms of, like, it stretches out for spacing. But also for him to play at the four and be someone who can catch it and attack closeouts, and be able to just play like a guard in a little bit of a sense at the four position, that's really valuable. Another valuable thing about Muhammad is when he's on the court, Wiggins typically gets guarded by the other teams too, because they put their three on Muhammad. And Wiggins is effective in the post, and that's why Flip Saunders liked playing Muhammad and Wiggins so much together. And part of what's to blame is probably how Sam Mitchell used Muhammad differently than Wiggins. But when Muhammad and Wiggins were on the floor, it created a huge mismatch in Wiggins' favor. And that's one positive. Now, I'm not saying we should keep him. I think very likely we should not re-sign him or anything like that. But it's not something we should just dismiss right away. And how dare you bring up what he did and when he brought that girl in his room. That was so long ago. The guy's been so clean. Now, Snapchats are a little sketchy.
Oh,
I acknowledge that. But he's been a good guy. He's been a good human being. Why are you
throwing shade? A good guy? Nobody. Hey, you know why? Because you never hear anybody say, man, I just love to be Shabazz Muhammad's teammate. I really like this guy, Shabazz Muhammad.
He is not part
of the fraternity. He is a guy. What are you talking about?
They always take pictures with him.
Give me one.
Do you follow these guys on social media? He's always a part of, like, it's the crew and stuff like that. And, like, him taking pictures, you know, the original OG KD.
He is 23. He is 23.
So he all is. Right, all right. His Snapchat's like, or I mean, his all social media, it seems like he's a homie with the guys. And it's obviously not like how Zach Wiggs and Towns are all like have a bromance together, but it seems like he gets along with the guys, and he hasn't done anything wrong since he's been in the league. He did when he was a little kid coming out of college, but he's over that, or he's been over that.
He has ruined, if we keep him, we will not be able to create my monster trade for Boogie, and that's the main reason why I want him gone, trade because he's going to be a part of the Rubio package to Boogie. It's happening, and Macklemore, because I want them both.
That's just such a weird trade. Okay. Did you get a chance to read the Kevin Pelton player breakdown at all?
Yes. Well, I skimmed it. Refresh my memory.
All right. So, Kevin Pelton, ESPN numbers guy. He's personally my favorite analyst. Shout out, Kevin Pelton. Some highlights from it that I thought were interesting. Just some stats he pointed out as he broke down all our players. He talked about LaVine and how awesome of a spot-up shooter he was. Guess what his effective field goal percentage he was from as a spot-up shooter? 64.9. He was sixth among people who had at least 100 attempts. When he's spotting up from three, he's a spot-up shooter. He is really, really good. We keep talking about how we need to get a pure shooter. LaVine has potential to be a legitimate threat from three. The kid is 20 years old, and he is shooting the ball freaking well, or 21 years old. He shot a really
well. You gotta get it in his head that he is not one to shoot off the dribble, not one to. He takes these weird, goofy, I'm gonna take one step in the in front of the 3-point line and launch these long twos off the dribble because he thinks he's Michael Jordan. We gotta get it in his head who he is so we can start playing like who he is. He is the person who Shabazz Muhammad could have been had he been a decent shooter. I like LaVine. I want him on our team. We should keep him.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. But I thought that stat was interesting. Wiggins, he had 208 points on post-ups. He led all perimeter players in the NBA on that. And that's part of the reason we talked about earlier why Flip liked playing Boz with Wiggy. And he shot pretty efficient. He got 0.95 points per post-up, which doesn't sound that good, but that's because post-ups for perimeter players, post-ups in general usually aren't that efficient. But I think this points to why it would be helpful for us to have a stretch four. Because Wiggins is a perimeter player who likes to spend a lot of time in the post, which has value when you aren't able to create things offensively at the end of a game or when a play breaks down. Being able to use a perimeter player in the post has a little bit of value and can create some mismatches. But if we don't have a stretch four, there isn't space for him to be able to operate at all in that capacity.
I agree. That's why we got to trade Buzz. Can't shoot. Okay. Send him away.
All right. Here is a depressing stat about Wiggins. He was the second lowest. The lowest was Anthony Davis, who played the majority of minutes at the center position last year. He was the second lowest in assists for players who had at least 20 points per game. Wiggins pass the ball well.
That is true.
Which is tough because we have other players who are good scorers. With Towns and LaVine, we have players who can shoot the ball well. And I think being able to add a little bit more versatility could be really, really important if he's going to become more effective.
And I think this is the difference between Wiggins turning out, and I'm using these guys just as current examples, whether Wiggins is going to be like a Kevin Durant-type player who, by all metrics, is a great all-around player. The guy can score, pass, and rebound, which makes him so unique. Or is he going to be like a Melo, which, at the end of the day, not a bad career to end up having. But Melo doesn't pass the ball worth jack. Can't pass the ball worth jack. Will never pass the ball worth jack. Who do we want? Do we want a KD? Do we want a Melo? I think we want a KD. I think Wiggins can improve. I don't think he'll ever be a great passer. He doesn't have that, you know, playmaking ability. But I do think he can at least become adequate, which is what we need him to become. And I think he can become much better defensively as well, which all factors in.
Yeah, I feel like you're throwing a little too much shade at Melo. He was probably the Knicks' best passer last season. He was had a higher assist rate than he's had his whole career. He's not a zero on passing. I think a better comparison would be like, is Wiggins going to be like a Rudy Gay? Because that's the worst case scenario.
There you go. Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to be Rudy Gay. Do not. But Rudy Gay put up similar numbers and is similarly ineffective at things that weren't scoring the basketball. So, hopefully he's not Rudy Gay. Hopefully he's Paul George.
Yeah, well, at least we know he's not going to be the next James Posey. Shade at Neil Payne. Friggin' 538. I'm so mad about that. I'm still mad about it.
It's really funny because, like, right when that came out, was, like, halfway through the season, is, like, right when he turned it around and went from averaging, like, 12 points a game to 20 points a game. That was awesome, his rookie year.
Yeah, it was money. It was money.
That was so... Another thing that he pointed out, if he's talking about Nemanja Bjelica, you know, I'm pretty... I want
Nemanja Bjelica!
This is the most perplexing statistic to me. He shot 72.7% within 3 feet. He finished...
Nemanja Bjelica!
How the heck does this guy finish unbelievable? He's, like, so creative and has touch. Like, he's unathletic, relatively. It doesn't seem like he should be able to finish well, but he does. He finishes incredible inside. That is just perplexing. He needs to learn how to not foul people, but that was amazing.
I'll tell you why. Because he's Nemanja Bjelica, European MVP. Who going to stop her? I'm a big Belly fan. I think Belly, if he was a little bit, I feel like he's walking or jogging like half speed most of the time. If he got a little quicker, he may be the solution we need at stretch four, but he's too old, doesn't fit the timeline. Trade him.
Trade him? Okay, I don't want to trade him at all. He's also.
I'm just playing. I don't want to trade him.
He's also a decent passer, which is just really nice to have it, considering our other scores. Last thing that he brought up, I want to point out. Guess what Tyus Jones' assist to turnover ratio was?
If I had to guess, 3.48.
Yes! Great guess. That was amazing.
Oh, man. I may have the article in front of me. That's, yep, okay.
Yeah, Tyus Jones had an amazing efficiency when it came to passing the ball versus turning it over. And I think that's something that we don't want to neglect. And people are quick to point out how poorly he shot it, but it was such a small sample size because he didn't play that much. He can't guard anybody. That's true. But, you know, he's a point guard, and it's not as important as bigger guys guarding. Him guarding is important, but he has potential to improve, and I think that assisted turnover statistic is really, really encouraging.
Yeah, I've been saying it all along. Tyus Jones, Summer League MVP, in company with the one, the only, the legend, Damian Lillard, all right? He is the future of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He is going to be point guard. Chris Dunn is going to be at the two when we win our first championship. You heard it here first, folks. Tyus Jones is for real.
You think he'll start at point guard and Chris Dunn will start at two and LaVine won't?
I didn't think that through. I don't know what's going to happen. It's either going to be Dunn or it's going to be LaVine. They're going to fight it out. I think Dunn is too careless with the ball to be a long-term point guard. I think he's going to have the same issue that people had with LaVine. I think naturally he's going to be more like a Tony Allen who can score.
He's a point guard. LaVine's problem is he's not a point guard. Dunn is a natural playmaker. Yeah. And Dunn isn't a shooter, but he's not a Tony Allen. He shot still 37% from three.
No, I said Tony Allen who can score. And here's the other thing. Who do you want with the ball in their hands at the end of the game? All right, here's what's going to happen. Dunn's
clutch.
Tyus Jones is not going to be the starting point guard. He's going to be the finishing point guard. There's 10 seconds left in the game. Dunn is on the bench. Jones is on the floor. He takes the ball, crossover, step back, fadeaway, fouled. 4-point play, we win. Beat the Celtics in the finals, 2019. It's happening. Called it here first, folks. Hey, so what are your thoughts on Olympics? Guy's not playing. Wiggins, not playing for Team Canada. Bjelica, Nemanja Bjelica, not playing. Gorgui Dieng, Why are they not playing? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is Carl Towns going to support his Dominicans? What do you think?
First of all, I want to say I totally, absolutely respect the decision for guys who want to represent their country and win a gold medal for their country. That's an amazing honor. That's something awesome to do. At the same time, I tend to think that if you want to have the best NBA career you could have, that you'd have very limited involvement in the Olympics. I believe there's more value to having an off-season of training both your skills, but probably even more important, physically preparing your body for the upcoming NBA season and for just the longevity of a career. And I think that not doing the Olympics is probably a better thing. The guys play 82 games plus 6 preseason games plus however many postseason games. What they need in the offseason is not to play more 5-on-5 structured games. What they need is to take time to refine their bodies, to refine their skills.
No. I think you are 100% wrong. You have once, maybe once in a lifetime, to honor your country by winning a gold medal. You have one chance, maybe two, if you have a long career. Let's look at some players who were able to support their country. LeBron James, did the Olympics make him injured or hurt or wear him out? I don't think so. He's one of the most has one of the best longevity careers of staying healthy. I think that the Olympics are a good thing. They allow you to support your country. And how much more fun would the Olympics be if Wiggins was on Canada? How much more fun would it be to see Carl Anthony Towns in a few years lead the Dominican Republic to their first ever gold medal in basketball? How much more fun and great would we look at these guys' careers? Did Jordan shy away because he's afraid of twisting his ankle? No. Jordan led the dream team to a gold medal. I think it's so ridiculous. I think these guys need to man up and play.
All right. First things first, why would you choose Jordan and LeBron, two of the most physically freakish athletes of all time, as examples? You can't use them. They're outliers.
Because they're the best examples.
No. Nobody compares to them. They're not like normal human beings. That's not fair, and you're not allowed to do that, okay?
Let's look at the other side of the argument. Carmelo Anthony, yes, never won an NBA championship. But you know what he says? He says gold medals to him are even more important. When he looks at his career, he's going to see those golds, and he's going to say, look at me. I'm the greatest United States Olympian of all time because I have the most gold medals.
Yeah, it's really easy to say that when you never won an NBA championship. Okay, don't take Carmelo's word. let's be honest, okay? What do you think? Do you think more players would say, I would rather lose this NBA Finals if that meant that I could go win the Olympics versus the opposite? No. It is way easier for an American to win a gold medal than to win an NBA championship. And I understand how valuable it is to win for your country and what that means, but there is no way that that is a better accomplishment than winning what the real world championship is, the NBA Finals.
Yep. I agree to disagree.
All right.
I think these guys are being weenies and they should play.
I think this is definitely good for them. I'm glad they didn't do it. I think there's like a slight statistical negative correlation with the Olympics when I've looked into it, but I need to do more analysis.
How fun would it be to see Carl Anthony Towns take on Team USA by himself, score 56 points, and win the game? That, to me, is the reason why I wanted to play. You don't know that. You don't know how good he's going to be. He may be the next chosen one. I think he is the next chosen one. It could happen because the United States are having people drop out left and right. They're basically putting out the B squad. And in 4 years, who knows?
I like the Olympics. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be more fun if they played. I'm saying that ultimately, Wiggins said, I want to focus more on the upcoming season. I think Belly and Jang said similar things. And I think by him saying that, he's actually doing the right thing. Because if he wants a complete, optimal NBA career, that not doing the Olympics is a slight advantage over doing it. And putting that wear and tear on your body and taking away from the individual skill development that could happen from doing personal training.
Hey, Jack, did you hear that noise?
What was that?
Hear that?
I didn't.
It's the sound of mailbag!
La, la, la. All right. So
what do we got? What do we got this week?
We've got a few mailbag questions from Brandon over the weeks that we haven't gotten to. First one we're going to talk about is another Kevin Pelton thing, because we're all about Kevin Pelton on this podcast. It's the RPM projections. So what Kevin Pelton has done is he releases what the projections are of what teams will win. And for the Timberwolves, based on RPM, they got 37.1. But it does not account for coaching. And it does not include anything for the addition of Tom Thibodeau. So Brandon Meyer wrote, according to this article he found last summer from 538, it is projected that Thibs will add 7.5 wins. Now, I looked at the article, how they do their research, like, it's very minimal. It's not, I wouldn't look at that article and say, wow, this is a really positive way to project how many wins a coach will add. It basically takes what the coaches have done in their limited situations, so it's really small sample sizes, but still is very interesting. If you add what the RPMs and with Tibbs added, the 538 projections, it comes out to 44.6 wins. What do you think about this? It actually kind of lines with almost exactly what I said, 44 wins.
You said 48.6?
I said 44. RPM plus Thibs is 44.6.
Oh. I think you chose your answer because you knew about the shady information.
I didn't. I did not see this until he sent me the 538 article. I knew about the Kevin Pelton thing. I know for a fact Kevin Pelton thinks he'll get more than his projections say. But I just thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, in your mind, if we get 44 wins, is that a success? Is that where we want to be?
I mean, we'll probably get in the playoffs. Yeah. I think that's putting yourself in a spot to make the playoffs. So I'd be all about it.
Yeah.
What do you think about...
I still think we're going to get 50 wins.
50 wins? You projected 49.
What do you think about... Did I really?
Yeah.
I take that back. Scratch 49, 50. We're going to get 50 wins on the nose. And the last win is going to be the last game of the season. Game-winning shot by Tyus Jones.
Yeah. So he brought up those win projections. I thought that was something interesting to share. Another thing he brought up was Wiggins' efficiency in the first half of the shot clock. So he found this stat, which is from a site he doesn't have reference to, that Wiggs shot with 13 seconds or more on the shot clock, he shot 51.2%. With only 12 seconds or less on the shot clock, he only shot 40.6%. That's the definition of a bailout guy. If Tibbs establishes an offense with good ball movement, those splits shouldn't be nearly as drastic. What do you think about that?
I mean, here's the thing. I think the extent of Sam Mitchell's offense last year was move the ball and let Rubio create, and if we don't have anything, give the ball to Wiggins and hope something happens. And frankly, it works sometimes. Wiggins was good. Especially we talked about his post game a little bit, clutch situations when he has to score, he found ways to score, got to the line a lot. So that also, factors into the whole conversation. But I think that a better offensive scheme, not that Tibbs is any offensive genius, but even just a competent one, will highly increase Wiggins' efficiency. As to what that looks like, if there's going to be a better, I'm guessing there'll be less disparity between the two. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
So a couple of things. First of all, Wiggins was actually above average efficiency, which is good for especially his 27% usage rate. He has such a good free throw rate that it really does great things for his efficiency. But in response to, and I do think it'll get better with better offensive schemes, but I don't think that Brandon's idea that he was a bailout guy is actually true if you look at the numbers. So first of all, first thing I want to establish is on average, the league in the first 5 seconds of the shot clock shoot 55.2%. And in the last or in the next five shoot 44.8. So there's this huge disparity between how efficient you are if you're able to get a good look in the first 5 seconds than in the next five. And a lot of that is because you might get an open layup, or the defense will be scrambling. And so getting shots early on is generally more efficient. And in the last 6 seconds, it's the least efficient with 37.9. And if you look at Wiggins, so I went to NBA.com and I charted out all his percentages, and let me read these to you. In the first 3 seconds, he shoots 60.1%. In seconds 18 through 22 on the shot clock, he shoots 57.6%. In seconds 18 through 15, he shoots 44.2%. 15 through 7, he shoots 42.5%. And seconds 7 through 4, 48.6%. There's a weird bump there. And in the last 4 seconds, he actually shot 43.1%, which isn't bad. And so I think you see something very clear in this efficiency. It's not that he's a bailout guy and is really inefficient when he's shooting at the end. It's that he's really efficient when he's in transition. When he shoots within the first 6 or 7 seconds, he's getting buckets, which is astounding because last year in pace, we were 19th. We had Ricky Rubio, Zach LaVine, Karl Towns, and Andrew Wiggins, and we were 19th in pace. Why is that? And Tibbs doesn't want to simply play with high pace, but we have guys
That's my thing. Is that going to change? Because we have... Now, granted, Tibbs did take the world tour and got to go watch a lot of different summer camps and learned a lot. Maybe he's changed a little bit of his philosophy. But I remember watching those Bulls teams. They were the definition of grind it out. And they had freaking Derrick Rose on their team, one of the most explosive, quick guards in the league. And yet it seemed as if their goal was to get it in the half court and see what they could create. I watched their offense. It was almost painful at times. Do you really think that there's going to be a change there, even though we've got the tools to do it?
It's just so hard for me to imagine there not being, because with Ricky Rubio, who makes a lot of plays in transition, Chris Dunn, who seems to have a lot of potential in transition, and Zach LaVine's a really good finisher too, and Wiggins, and Towns, who can grab a rebound and go. Like, how can a coach have that team and not think in this day and age with the analytics that we have that we should not play at a higher tempo than 19th in the league? That's absurd. Zach LaVine finishes really well, too. We need to push the ball if we want to utilize our best players. And there's a lot of misconceptions about pace that I want to clear up. First of all, when Dean Oliver wrote his book, Basketball on Paper, he found that offensive pace does not correlate with better defensive efficiency. The traditional school of thought is that if we make a team guard us for a longer period of time, then they'll be less efficient on offense because they'll be more tired and more focused on defense. That's a fun theory, but in reality, that doesn't happen that much. And there's actually some things about playing with high pace that can help in certain ways defensively. Because the more efficient you are on offense, the more likely an opponent won't push after a miss because you'll make more shots. If they're less likely to push on a miss, they're likely to be less efficient on offense. If they're less efficient on offense, you're more likely to push. And if you're more likely to push, you are more efficient on offense. You see, there's this idea that being efficient on offense is good for your defense, and being efficient on defense is good for your offense. And so playing with pace, in theory, actually has some benefits to your defense. And if you look in history, like last or 2 years ago was the first time ever a team was like Golden State where they were amazing at both defense and pace. So we haven't seen that historically, but I don't think that's causation. I think that's more correlation of philosophies of different teams and coaches. But at the end of the day, teams are more efficient than ever in the first 6 seconds. And if we don't try to utilize that, I think that's a horrible mistake.
I agree. I think it is interesting that we were as efficient as we were on offense last year, even though our offense just looked like a slog.
Yeah, we were 11th. We were 11th in efficiency.
I know, which is crazy. And we know that Tibbs is going to improve our defense. And that'll probably where we see the greatest drastic change, and I'm excited about that. But ultimately, offensively is the question mark, and I think that's where we're I'm curious as to see what I feel like you can't go anywhere but up after last year watching our offense, at least in the half court, and hopefully there will be more pace integrated into our play, hopefully with improved shooting. Not that we really picked up anyone who's going to drastically improve our shooting, but Who knows? Maybe Butler will have a hot streak. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Another interesting thing that Brandon posted was a game for us. Have you looked at this game?
No.
Okay, this game is called Higher, Which Will Be Higher? All right, so I'm going to I'm going to list two things, and we're going to have to guess which one of these will be higher. So the first one.
Okay.
What will be higher, Ricky Rubio games played or Golden State Warriors wins?
Well, a quick question. Does it mean Ricky Rubio games played for the Timberwolves? Because you know he's going to Sacramento for Boogie.
No, he's not, but just games played overall.
Just games played overall. I'm going to say Golden State wins.
I'm
going to
say Ricky Rubio games played. He's had some injuries, but some of them aren't likely to result in more injuries. And we have Dunn and Tyus, so although Tibbs plays a lot. But I'm going to say Ricky Rubio games played. All right, which will be higher, Timberwolves win improvement over last season or Zach LaVine points per game?
Oh, my gosh. Zach LaVine is going to score 15 points a game this year, so I'm going to say win improvement will be higher.
I'm going to say Zach LaVine points per game because I think he'll average like 16 points. Oh, my gosh. And we'll get like 15 more wins.
How many wins did we have last year?
29.
Oh, okay. All right.
Unlike your prediction, over 30.
All right, go.
So our next one, DeMarcus Cousins technical fouls. He had 17 last year. Or Gorgui Dieng money made in millions per year during his next contract.
I actually think that Jorger to Sacramento was brilliant. I think he's going to be a brilliant fit for Boogie. I think we're going to see a tranquil, more focused, less reactionary, because I think that these two are already chums. In fact, I was listening to a podcast, I believe it was Zach Lowe's podcast, where Boogie got on a plane the morning of to meet Jorger the day of his first conference in Sacramento. I think these two are going to hit it off. I think this is the secret sauce in Sacramento and the only thing getting in the way of my perfect trade. So I'm going to go ahead and say that Gorgie's money made in millions is going to definitely be higher.
Yeah, I'm going to say Gorgui money made, but I'm going to say that because Cousins will likely regress a little bit from 17 technical fouls, and Dieng is going to make bank. He's going to make, at least 50. DeAndre Jordan free throw percentage or Zach LaVine 3-point percentage?
Oof.
DeAndre Jordan shot 43% last year, 42% for his career, and Zach LaVine shot 39% from three.
Yeah, I'm going to say DeAndre.
Me too.
Sorry, Zach.
Yeah, I think LaVine's three-point percentage won't change much, probably. I think more his three-point rate, and he'll take a lot more.
I'd be surprised if he breaks 40.
Yeah, I would be surprised, but... Andrew Wiggins, rank in scoring leaders. He was 19th, or the Chicago Bulls rank in the Eastern Conference.
Ooh.
That's a tough
one. Here's the thing. The room for points per game and the Timberwolves is going to be very, I feel like, even more spread this year.
Yeah.
I think Towns is going to be scoring more. I think Dunn's going to be scoring. I think we're going to get a lot of spread scoring. I see Wiggins averaging 23 points a game this year. Not a big of a jump. 23 points. I hope that where Wiggins improves isn't so much in scoring per game, but in assists, rebounds, and a lot of the intangibles. So, I will say Chicago rank, playoff rank.
It's a really tough question without looking at, like, what the top scorers are scoring. Like, you don't know if 24 points per game would be, like, 10th. It's a really hard question.
Yeah. Chicago's going to be a weird team. I'm excited to watch them.
Yeah. I'm going to go Andrew Wiggins. I think he's going to have a bump.
Ooh.
And I think the Bulls are a complete mess. All right, Steph Curry, three-point percentage. He shot 45.4% last season. Or Oklahoma City Thunder wins.
Oof. I mean, OKC's going to get 46 wins this year. So I think that's going to do it. I think it'll be OKC.
Man, I do not have confidence in OKC. I'm going to say OKC, but I don't like their... I don't like them as much as some people, but I'll say OKC.
Because
46. Russell or Westbrook rank in MVP voting, or Hassan Whiteside blocks per game? I'm going to... Whiteside had 3.7 blocks per game.
Yeah, that's not even a question. Russell Westbrook is winning MVP this year. I mean, that's not even a question. I'm going to say Hassan averages, what, 4 blocks a game, 3 blocks a game?
Mm-hmm. So you're going to say Westbrook?
Yeah. Or wait. I'm saying Hassan's higher.
Yeah, what will be lower then?
Hassan's going to have more blocks.
Okay.
Westbrook will be lower.
Westbrook is not going to win MVP this year, but I'm still going to say Westbrook.
LOL.
I don't think he's going to win. I think people have caught on to how his high usage isn't necessarily what makes... All right. Karl Towns, PER, he had 22.5 last year, or Cleveland Cavaliers losses. This is the last one.
Cleveland likes to do this whole thing where they kind of coast during the regular season and then become the Monstars in the playoffs. So I'm going to go with... Karl Anthony Towns.
Oh.
Higher PER. What do you think?
Let's see. If Cleveland gets like 55 wins, that's like 27 lost. 27 PR is so
I think good. It's about right.
I'm going to go Cleveland Cavalier he's losses.
Oh, really? Why are you going to throw shade at Towns, man? He's going to have a 28.5.
That'd be sick. Well, I have to go to class pretty soon. But last thing I want to state. Last podcast, we talked about how Timberwolves, they were like 5th overall. That was an unfinished screenshot. They're actually like 21st or something in NBA 2K. So we went from being like way overrated to, I think, underrated. Zach LaVine's like a 73, which is bogus. Chris Dunn, absolutely, I think, is a bogus. 77. Well, hey. But
yeah. All right, thanks for tuning in. This is the Wolf Brothers Podcast. Join in next week as we continue to chatter about the greatest team on Earth. This is how we end every show on the count of three. Say what you're thinking. 1, 2, 3. Nemanja Bjelica! Wow.